Welcome to WeAreTechnology.com's User Friendly 2.0 with host Bill Sickens, Technology Architect.
And this is User Friendly 2.0. Welcome to this week's show. Bill, Gretchen, welcome to this week's show.
Hello.
So anything new and exciting in your lives? I know here it's finally, I think we've gotten out of the heat, so I'm happy about that. And still recovering from Rose City Comic Con and looking forward to our next one, which I think might be a retro computer festival coming up next month.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, I have not been to one of those before, but with all of the retro computing stuff that we're starting to do for Bill Builds, and even though that wasn't originally the direction we're going to go, it's kind of where we've ended up, which is a really good thing, a happy thing. But I want to learn more about all of this stuff, and seems like this is one of the bigger ones. Apparently, there's five or six of these that take place around the country every year, and the one in Portland, of course, is closer to us, so we're going to start with that one. But I know a lot of the other content producers on YouTube and stuff that do these type of things have gone to a lot of the different shows, and you can pick up and find parts and things that you couldn't anywhere else. And it sounds like something that's very interesting, plus to meet other people in the community, you know? So I think that'll be kind of fun. So we'll keep you apprised on that. And between now and then, we're going to be taking our season break. We're going to be coming out with content, of course, but we're going to be looking back at some of the past things, some of the really cool things that have happened over the past couple of years for the next couple of weeks. And if there's anything breaking or anything like that, we'll, of course, bring it to you. And it will be here at the normal time every week. So during that time, hit our website, userfriendly.show. Give us your questions. Give us your comments. That's how we program. And the more information we can get from you, the more we can bring you what you want to hear. All right, I didn't give you guys an opportunity to answer that question. Anything new and exciting?
I don't know. I've just been waiting for my publishers to get me my next set of stuff to look through.
Yeah, don't you love the logistics of publishing?
Oh, gosh, it's really stressful. And I think it's easier just to write the book.
It is easier just to write the book. No question about that. So, yeah. Alrighty then. No, well, let's see if there's anything exciting in the news.
Well, Bill Snodgrass was going to say something.
Oh, okay. Well, go ahead. I didn't see you there. What's the...
I was saying there's nothing new for me. I've been playing older video games, but they've been coming out pretty fun. So,
Oh, well, that's cool.
Yeah, I guess I'm playing older video games too, but and I like them. So, you know, there you go.
They have Everybody been wants- fun.
If anybody wants to donate an Altered Beast arcade cabinet to the show, we'd be happy to get it. So just go to our website and we'll let you know where to send it. On that note, now let's see if there's anything exciting in the news.
Well, apparently Microsoft is quietly killing off apps. What's that about?
Well, and some of this is in the past tense too. It's something that I guess people are starting to notice because this isn't that terribly unusual. Microsoft, Apple, and most other publishers will go through and revise things and applications and other, you know, features that aren't being used might be put away, gotten rid of, and new things introduced. I mean, we see that also with Google and their services. But some of the ones from Microsoft that either have been sunsetted already or are about to be are ones that actually we may have heard of. Now, one that was retired a while ago, of course, is Internet Explorer. And you'll get a lot of questions on this. They've replaced it with a browser called Edge. Internet Explorer at one point had 94.6% of the total internet users using it. And that was a long time ago now, but it was definitely something that's been out there and off and on. It's been used more or less, but it was the go-to for a very long time. And it was just time for them to update, and they did. And as such, they have Edge out, which they're, you know, trying to lure everybody, I don't know if lure is the right word, but get everybody to use somewhat aggressively sometimes on Windows. But it is interesting because Edge and Chrome, which is Google's browser, which is the most used one right now, use the same engine. So it the framework's different. There's a lot of other differences too, but the way that it renders and all that kind of stuff comes from the same place. So we, I think, did a RIP for Internet Explorer when it went away, If you're still using it, I don't know how you're doing that because it doesn't work anymore. So the next one is an interesting one. There's an application that's been with Windows, I think back to at least Windows 2, if not 1.0, and that's Windows Paint. And this started out as an application where you could set up your pixels and everything like that, and then later it got color. And then later when we got resolutions of screens that were more than 40 columns, they started supporting that. You know, these kind of things as life went on, and Paint is still in Windows. In 2017, they were going to replace it with a product called Paint 3D. And they did come up with the other Paint program. It never replaced it, but it was issued and was able to run alongside of it. I don't know if it ever came with Windows, though, because I've never saw it like with an install or anything. But the idea with it is you could go in and do 3D models, remix other people's designs, all that kind of stuff. You could even do things for your 3D printer, you know, getting those type of things set up. But it never really worked. People still use classic Paint for quick shots, quick screenshot edits, those type of things. And as far as the more involved stuff, software like Blender is and was used. So at the end of the day, we're not seeing Paint go away, but Paint 3D was removed from the Microsoft Store about a year ago, a little less than a year ago now. And the next one that I had never heard of was what they call a Netflix wannabe. What was that, Gretchen?
Oh, well, I keep thinking about the solitaire game that used to be in with Windows, and I miss that. You know, it was, you know, you just needed to waste some time in between something. And the solitaire game is gone, along with the Minesweeper game. Does anybody remember those?
Oh, yeah. Well, I do, too. Yes. We haven't switched timelines where they didn't exist. Other things like, has anybody ever heard of Jiffy Peanut Butter? Let us know on the website. Anyway, as far as all of that goes, yeah, a lot of it's not distributed anymore. You actually can go to the Microsoft Store, though, and still get for free Solitaire and Minesweeper and some of these others. They do still exist. They haven't been killed off.
Can't find them, though.
Not installed by default. So I'll have to look and see if they're available and if I'm going to have to issue a correction on that later. But I think they are. The last time I looked, they were, which about 6 months ago, because this came up for somebody wanting to actually install Solitaire, and we were still able to do it. So anyway, next one up here is what they call a Netflix wannabe, and this was called Xbox Video. I'd never heard of it, so, you know, maybe it wasn't marketed too well. They changed the name, and it was named now Movies and TV. That's original. And it was trying to compete, I guess, with Netflix, and over time, streaming services replaced it on other things, and back in July of this year, Microsoft pulled the plug on new purchases and rentals. So you can't do that anymore. You can still use it to play video and that kind of a thing. I don't know if they're completely doing away with that or not. But it just goes to show even the big boys sometimes can't compete. But also, you know, Microsoft is a good marketing company in certain things. But it seems like there's stuff out there, and I've noticed this over the years, where it's just put out there even very good applications and things, and then they just don't market it, and you don't know that it exists. And, you know, so if you don't know about it, it can be the best one in the world, and you're still not going to use it. So anyway, did either of you ever use this Xbox Video movies and TV thing?
No.
No.
Oh, yeah, I didn't either. So I can't say I'm surprised to hear that it's going away, although it would have been nice if I'd heard about it before that. But hey, you know. So the next one, do either of you know what a Zune is?
That yes. Sounds familiar, but I'm not sure what it is.
They talked about it on Big Bang Theory. Sheldon was upset about buying one. Bill, what is a Zune?
Isn't that an MP3 player that was made by Microsoft?
It is. That's exactly what it is. And it was going to compete with the Apple Walkman? Player, you know. And the iPod did not get pushed out of first place by the Zune. Well, along with that, they had a thing called Groove Music. And it started as something called the Zune Music Pass, morphed into Xbox Music, so everything seemed to go Xbox, and then was rebranded to Groove when Windows 10 came out. But all of those renamings didn't seem to do much for it, and it has not become people's go-to music service. So a while back, it was announced that Groove Music Pass would be shut down. That was back in 2017. They actually, unlike Sony, did refund the subscribers for the part that they weren't able to get to and that kind of a thing. And after that, they tried to partner with Spotify to transfer a playlist, which is also kind of cool because that didn't mean you, that meant you didn't lose your playlist. And Groove was around for a while after that for playing music. The Groove apps now for Android, iOS, and Windows, for that matter, are gone. So, yeah, again, something, I guess if Zune had taken off, this probably would have been something that was more known. And I think it probably originally was to be something like the, you know, iTunes store, but it just didn't work out. Microsoft has not done too well on mobile. They tried to do a Microsoft mobile a while back, if you even remember that mobile version of Windows, and were making phones and different things like that. And it wasn't that the technology was bad. It just never tracked against iPhone and Android. And so, you know, we're seeing this all the way around. The one thing I have to say as a programmer, it is nice not having to develop apps for four different platforms. At one time, it was BlackBerry, Android, Microsoft, and Apple. So now we're just down to two. Makes it a little bit easier to deal with all that kind of stuff. So the next one, which I also hadn't heard of, is an application called Mail. Very informative name, I guess. What do you think it did?
Is it Mail, M-A-L-E, or M-A-I-L?
It's M-A-I-L.
Okay. Just thought I'd ask.
So Microsoft is a part of the Office 365 suite, has a program called Outlook that has been around forever. Back into that is something called Exchange. And over the years, I've had to support both of these things. And that's one of the reasons why I've moved into programming and not on-site support. Exchange was a really strange beast. When it worked, it was great. But when it didn't work, it was not so great. In fact, I think I'd have more hair to this day if that hadn't been around. But in any event, what they tried to do was make a thin client type environment for reading your email. Now, Outlook, again, supports reading email. It does a very good job at it. Anything that Gmail can do is, for example, with the calendaring and all that kind of stuff, you can do on Outlook. In fact, data can be transferred between the two of them. So it worked. It was out there. It was great. But then it was decided that for whatever reason, when Windows 10 came out, we needed another application called Mail. Now, they didn't do away with Outlook. They just added this Mail app. And for some reason, computer software on regular computers are now called apps too. Not quite sure when that happened.
Yeah, confuses me.
The Mail app or the Mail software was done as a lightweight, touch-friendly thing that was integrated into Outlook.com, which is where you read your Outlook email online and work with all of the different things. But it just isn't something that kicked in. And again, you know, one of these type of applications that probably should have had a little bit more use, but it just wasn't. I think it was kind of not needed, though, with Outlook. And I think from a branding perspective, if they had done something like Outlook Lite or something of that nature that people associated with Mail, because they had done all the time branding Outlook, it probably would have gone a little bit better. So Mail ended on December 31st of last year, after which it can no longer send or receive messages. You can still look at the email that's out there. And one of the other things I have to say too is, even though I don't use Outlook for my primary mail client anymore, like most of us, we use Google now, I did find out I needed to back up my Gmail and wanted to save it. And there isn't really a way to archive it, but there is a way to transfer it into Outlook, and then you can store it and then use Outlook to be able to go back through and search your archives and that kind of a thing. So even from that purpose, it actually serves a good, you know, a good purpose. But again, that's, I digress a little bit. That's not Mail, but yeah. So those are some of the apps, the top five at least, that are no longer with us.
Well, the next one, Send Your Name Around the Moon.
Yeah, so this is kind of cool. It's get to it from NASA's website. And basically what it is you put in your name and a PIN code and sign up for the website. And then your name will be included alongside the four astronauts that are going to be going on the Artemis II mission coming up here. The names are going to be included on an SD card, which will be flown when the mission launches in 2026. So it's something I'm going to do, because then I can tell everybody my name went around the moon.
Oh,
you know, something that would be fun to do. NASA has a lot of offerings to get people involved. And if anybody's an expert on this, please write in, because I'd love to sit down and kind of go through all of this and come up with a one stop for the different things. A lot of STEM type education and a lot of things that are just kind of fun.
All right. Japanese women rank top 10 most popular anime characters to cosplay in a new survey.
So I barely can pronounce the word anime. Bill, I know you know a lot more about this than I do. So if you had to guess, what would be the top franchise for anime cosplayers?
Oh, boy. Maybe One Piece?
Now, let me give you a hint. We were just going to send our names around the moon.
Sailor Moon,
yeah. And So this is actually something that they have rated out. I have heard of Sailor Moon, so at least I'm not that bad. I have not, however, heard of Kiki's Delivery Service or Lupin the Third.
Oh, and those
I
are good
no
ones.
Clue. Oh,
are they? I love this here. And by the way, I have nothing against anime. I don't mean it like that. It's just not something I know a lot about. Coming in fourth was Galaxy Express 999. Coming in fifth is a tie for fifth and sixth place was Demon Slayer and then Detective Conan. So, Bill, I'm glad you've heard of these. And I'm sure anybody that likes anime is going to send us a lot of comments on this. But I think it's kind of cool to see that there is so much interest. And there is. There really is. Because I know in most cities there are anime Comic-Con type festivals. I know Reno has that and has had it for a long time with Snafu. So,
Sacramento. You know,
again, this is certainly a fandom that a lot of people love.
Mm-hmm. More than 17,000 Honda vehicles recalled due to power steering failure.
So this is an interesting topic that would normally be something you just hear on the news. And, you know, we might talk about it here, might not. But what I found to be really telling on this, and something that a lot of you have written in on and asked questions about, is with all the new technology in cars, are they starting to have more problems? And this would be an example of somewhere where they've had more problems. So in addition to Honda, Ford's making recalls because the rear view camera might not work. That's nice. It goes on from there. So the best thing to do is go get an app like Carfax. And there's many others out there. Kelley Blue Book will do it, but just a couple. And you can sign up for a free account. Carfax will even allow you to maintain your vehicle repair logs and all that kind of stuff. They're not a sponsor or anything. It's just an app I like for that. But they will also tell you if there's an open recall. And if there is, it's a good idea to get it checked out, because these kind of things can cause a lot of problems. To this day on Ford, there's no problems that have been reported on the backup camera. But some of the other things, like Mazda has a thing on their hybrid vehicles, and we're thinking about Mazdas, so, you know, something to look at, that the fuel gauge may display an inaccurate reading. What could possibly go wrong there?
Oh, jeez.
You know, and the report is that it might run out of fuel and stall, increasing the risk of crash. Yes, I think so. So, again, if you have that, check and see if there's a recall, contact your Mazda dealer. They'll be able to go from there. All right, and then the headline, Honda is recalling 17,334, if you want the exact number, of the Acura RDX vehicles due to a potential issue with the power steering. So, you know, again, yeah, if your steering fails or doesn't work the right way, I could see where that could be a complication, and they say it might increase the risk of a crash. So while your steering wouldn't completely fail if this happened, it would become much more difficult to steer. And if you're at highway speed or something like that, that could be very unpleasant. They haven't reported any injuries or death yet, but it's another one to check about. And this isn't limited, by the way, to cars. Motorcycles are having the same type of thing. There's a recall on African twin motorcycles due to a potential issue with the left handlebar switch, which could corrode, stop working, and come off. That'd be unpleasant, I think. Both handlebars are nice on a motorbike, you know. And Ducati, which is a very well-known and known for quality motorcycle, is pulling approximately 10,182 of its motorcycles because the rear wheel axle could break while someone is riding. And believe it or not, they say that could increase the risk of a crash. If your axle breaks, yeah, I think it would.
Yeah.
So just a thing to keep an eye on, and it's a good thing to keep on top of this stuff, because the dealers will fix these things, but it is something that you don't want to be in a situation that could have been avoided.
All right. Publishers, clearinghouses, bankruptcy means forever winners will no longer get paid.
So here's my shock face, right? So Publishers Clearinghouse, for anybody that has not lived on Earth for the last 60 years, is a company that had these contests where you could win money for life, right? And you would subscribe to magazines to enter it and that type of a thing. And the company has gone out of business. And these were people that had actually won this. Example would be $5,000 a week for life and so on. And one individual was talking about how with this shutting down, he hadn't worked for more than 10 years. He's having to go out and get a job. Well, you know, all of us have to have a job, right? But the thing of it is not working in 10 years can make it much more difficult to get employment again.
Yeah.
So, and the other thing that, you know, I'm just curious about, I'm not a lawyer or anything, but I know, or at least I've heard in a lot of times when they do these kind of contests, you actually are supposed to get an insurance policy to back it up in case something like this happens. The same thing with extended warranties. And where that came into play was when CompUSA went out of business, their extended warranties would still be serviced because there was this insurance policy to cover them in that event. But evidently not with Publishers Clearinghouse. So they've, like I say, been around for almost 60 years. And it is the end of an icon in one way here, but just something that is a bummer.
Frank Frazetta painting smashes comic art record with $13.5 million sale.
Yeah, fantasy art is really heating up. And this is really kind of cool because I can remember not so long ago, science fiction and fantasy, if you were reading that, people thought you were like, you know, I don't know, Gretchen, how would you phrase
covered
that?
In cooties?
Yeah, okay, that might be the best way of it. But yeah, so the artwork, though, is ramping up, $13.5 million. This is something now Frank Frazetta painted, or not painted, but he was alive from 1928 until 2010, has done a number of different things. And this particular piece of art comes from the Conan the Barbarian series, sold at Heritage Auction. And there's a lot of other things like this going around now that are just really cool. I've always enjoyed this kind of artwork, so I'm glad to see it's getting its own.
All right. Apple backports fix for CVE-2025-43300 exploited in sophisticated spyware attack.
Gretchen, I'm sorry, I didn't get that number. Could you repeat it two or three more times, please?
We don't have much time.
Yeah, so this is an interesting thing. We have spyware and all that kind of stuff, but this was meant to sophisticatedly target individuals. In fact, less than 200, and with the number of people that have iPhones, that's a very small amount. But the 200s that it was being targeted at were people that probably didn't want their information to get out, like political officials and other things like that. So again, on Apple iOS, it's a vulnerability. WhatsApp was affected by it, and they are fixing this. But it's something, again, just to keep an eye on things. Make sure your devices are updated. You have the latest security updates and things, because it's the best way to be able to counter these type of things, especially if they decide to look at more than 200 people. This is User-Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User-Friendly 2.0. Michael, if you Comic-Friendly 2.0 is going to be joining us here in just a moment to answer your questions from Iron Man. Boy, did we get a lot into. So this is absolutely great. Please keep them coming. Some of them were a little bit of a challenge from what I understand, too, but a lot of very good information and all kinds of things that you don't know. And it's interesting, too, to me to find out this stuff, because it's like information comes up that is not necessarily related on the comic or the storyline or anything, but has stuff that you would never consider as a part of this. So let's go ahead and go to Michael and find out everything about Iron Man. Joining us now, Michael Regina, host of Comic Friendly 2.0. Welcome.
Hello, hello. How's everybody doing?
Oh, plugging along. We're recording here, I think, on the last hot day of the year, and there you are, you know?
Yeah. Well, as a Canadian, I can't really complain too much. I think our summers are too short and our winters last forever. So enjoy it.
Yeah. Here in the Pacific Northwest, by the time we get to about April, it feels like it's been gray for the last 100 years. So, you know, enjoy the sun while you got it, I guess. But anyway, well, you've had a lot of questions come in from the Ironman story that you did a while back. And so we thought we'd ask you some of them if you are so inclined to answer them.
I am absolutely inclined to answer. Always love talking shellhead. So hit me with your best shots.
All right, we'll give it a try. Gretchen, why don't you start the ball?
Which Iron Man storyline do you think best defines Tony Stark as a character and why?
Ah, that's a good question. There's a few I can name right off the top of my head, and I definitely think a lot of the comic audience will know some of these. Demon in a Bottle is definitely one of them. It's, you know, Tony's struggle with alcohol, how it impacts his life and his business and his legacy as Iron Man. I think that one's pretty telling. I liked the Best Defense storyline. We have Tony stripped of his armor, and he's actually gone into government, and he actually doesn't just decide to not use his armor. He actually loses it in a bid from someone to take it away and control it by the government. So I always thought that was an interesting one. And, you know, it talks about unarmored tech and, you know, how fear of terrorism was very, very rampant. This occurred in 2004. So it was an interesting one. And then one of the sea changes, I think, is definitely the extremist storyline that occurred in 2006 or 2007, I believe. It's a great reset, a good telling of Iron Man. It redefined him from just being a war profiteer, but it solidified his positioning as a futurist. And I really think it was really, really interesting and one of the great stories, one of the first great stories of the 21st century. And this also, of course, has many parallels to the first and second Iron Man films. So those are always great. And then, of course, honorable mention goes to Armor Wars. This occurred in the 80s. This was another great period of Tony Stark sort of growing and evolving.
You know, it's interesting because you look at all the different things they put in there to kind of create the story, and they do a very good job of it. But I know some of them, if I had a mech suit like that, I certainly wouldn't want the government having it. I don't know about you guys, but that would be a bad thing, I think, you know.
Especially like a whole plane full of them that can do a million different things, you know. So, yeah, definitely.
This is true. That just, I don't know, just the idea of that makes me shudder a little bit. But there you are. I think I'd be somewhat, to quote another franchise, Mandalorian, about keeping my suit. So, all right. Next question that came in. How have the Iron Man comics evolved over the decades in terms of art style and storytelling?
Well, that's interesting because Tony's use of tech really, really sort of forces that character to actually evolve, right? So as technology kind of updates and adapts, so has the application of that technology by Tony, so has the definition of what cutting edge or bleeding edge is, right? So Tony Stark, the character, and the artists and writers who worked on his stories have also needed to evolve, almost more so than a lot of other characters out there. You know, if you take a look at Superman from 1956 or something like that, and you look at the parallels to modern day Superman, you know, there's lots of differences, but there's also a lot of very similar things, right? The similar tropes of who he is as a core, down to the suit, you know, all that kind of thing. Whereas Iron Man has kind of had to push and had to evolve. So it's very, very interesting to see that. And so, you know, similar to comics, you know, they need to mature and change along with the audience that grows with them. And so I think just Iron Man kind of really speaks to that evolution because it's really tech based. You know what I mean?
Yeah. All right. Are there any underrated Iron Man villains that deserve more attention?
So a good one is the Living Laser. So there's a lot of potential there with photon power and photon, you know, type of abilities. And I think that's always going to be a lot of fun. So yeah, definitely the Living Laser is up there with my underrated Iron Man villains.
How do you feel about the portrayal of Tony Stark's personal struggles, such as his battles with addiction and guilt?
So I think that all really depends on the writer. You know, we've seen some really elegantly crafted stories, like Michelinie and Leighton's Demon in a Bottle storyline, you know, outline his dependence to addiction in a tight sort of 9-story arc, right? While even, you know, legendary Denny O'Neill, writers such as Denny O'Neill, right, they had a much longer run that essentially parked Tony for a while in favor of James Rhodey. That kind of ran entirely too long. So it's really interesting to see, like, how writers approach these different ideas about his struggles and what he's going through in all these different variations. Some do it, you know, really succinctly. Some do it really succinctly. Others, you know, they do take their time and maybe they stretch it out maybe a little bit too long.
All right. Well, let's dive into the next one here. What are some standout moments in Iron Man's history that new readers should definitely check out?
We talked about Extremis. I think that's definitely something that you'd want to check out. It's written by Warren Ellis from 05-06. You know, movie fans will definitely see the parallels there when it was adapted basically into the look and feel of the first two films. There's also in around 2008, there was a series titled The Five Nightmares. And that introduces Ezekiel Stane, so the son of Obadiah Stane, the main bad guy from the first Iron Man movie, if you recall. So I think that is kind of really telling to you know, modern audiences who maybe haven't really dove into Iron Man in a while. I think those are fun. There's also been a run from 2014 called Superior Iron Man. It shows a slightly darker side of Iron Man. Where he kind of throws morality out the window you know, is a great, if short, sort of miniseries, but it's fairly controversial. So, yeah, definitely check those out.
I think Ezekiel Stane shows up in a recent storyline on Disney Plus.
Yes, Ezekiel Stane was on Ironheart. The character was on Ironheart.
Yeah.
And he plays the same character he is in the comics. So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. How accurate do you feel the movie adaptations are to the comic book source material?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, films are interesting. They really are an adaptation of one medium to another, right? So you're going from, obviously, the written form, the you know, artist and writing sort of format, right? Visual and writing format into the motion picture format. And so this inherently means there will be compromises if you want to bring something from the page to the screen. So I think depending on the studio, the era, the source materials, I think some films really stick very close to that source material well, while others fail, vice versa. So, you know, I think the answer in this case is extremely subjective. So you need to ask yourself how important does it need to be that comics are movie accurate? Let me switch that around. That movies are comic accurate if the film is enjoyable on its own merit. Do you still enjoy it? And the answer really will depend on each individual.
And, you know, it kind of comes down to also how well they handle it. We've seen some franchises, not so much Iron Man, because I think they've done a good job with it, but some others where they really haven't. So, you know, there's a lot of variables that that work into that.
Yeah.
All right. So next question that came in, if you could recommend one Iron Man comic arc to a new reader, which would it be and why?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go back to Extremis. So as you could tell, I am a lover of Warren Ellis and Addie Granoff, the artist. Basically, Addie Granoff, the artist, basically gave us the modern version of what Iron Man looks like in Marvel, and it's been a staple ever since. Yes, it's changed slightly. The tech has been upgraded, the looks and feels have been upgraded, but if you were to Google Adi Granoff and look at his Iron Man work, you'll see it very, very evocative of the film works. So I do recommend the Extremist storyline. And you can pick that up Marvel's app. It's fully available there. You pay a nice small monthly fee and you can get almost all the comics that have ever been produced by Marvel. So it's a lot of fun.
Wow.
We're not sponsored by them, by the way, but I do recommend them.
Oh, wow. Have there been any creative teams, such as writers and artists, whose vision for Iron Man you particularly admire?
Yeah. So, Warren Ellis, Adi Granoff, definitely. Bob Michelinie and Leighton, with art by John Romita Jr. and Carmine Infantino, those guys, that was quite a pairing. Some really, really great work. And then Brian Michael Bendis and Alex Maleev, these are two of slightly newer artists and writers who are really, really doing a great job with Iron Man. And yeah, I really like their work. So I definitely would check out those guys. And not just their Iron Man work, I really like a lot of other works by these guys as well.
And, you know, the next one's an interesting question because we've seen the way they've done this in the movies, but the comic books may be completely different. And the question is, how has Iron Man's relationship with other Marvel heroes like Captain America or Pepper Potts been handled in the comics?
That's an interesting one. So the long history of these characters and the relationships have kind of changed over time, right? So Marvel has, and a lot of comic book universes have, what's called the sliding time scale. So if you were to ask, you know, the Marvel gods, like, hey, what year was Peter Parker born? It depends on what the current year is, and you just sort of subtract 17 years, whatever that is. And so there's always the sliding, evolving timescale, and the characters' relationships with each other have also evolved and changed over those times, right? And then you factor in sort of the need of writers to tell compelling storylines, and nothing is a more compelling storyline than drama, than, you know, crisis, than tension, those kind of things. So so those things have definitely come up quite often, right? So Tony Stark and Steve Rogers have either been the closest of friends or the staunchest of enemies, right? So sometimes they are at loggerheads, case in point, the first Civil War storyline. Other times, during the death of Captain America storyline, Tony was essentially holding a candle to Steve Rogers and trying to find the next Captain America and doing him doing honor to him, right? So so it really depends on the type of storylines. Those relationships are constantly evolving. When we talk about Pepper Potts, she made her debut just six issues into Iron Man, right? In Tales of Suspense 45. So she has been around quite a long time, and she started out as Stark's secretary. And in the comics, she actually marries Happy Hogan. She's not initially a love interest to Tony Stark. But she did have, before marrying Happy, she did have secret desires to marry him as she was his secretary. You remember this was the 1960s after all. Their relationship has changed greatly over the years. Now she is a partner, an equal partner, I would say, both in the business and in the superhero side of things, as she's donned her own suit and become known as Rescue in both the comics and the films.
Okay, let's see. What technological innovations in Iron Man's suits have most impressed you? I'm curious to see which one is your favorite.
I like all of them. I think they're all cool, but but I know that's a non-answer. So one of my favorite ones is the fact that Iron Man actually has roller skates. I think that's one of the funniest ones. But
I remember you talking about that too, and it was something like, what?
Yeah, we did. He had roller skates for a while. Yeah. So it was, I don't know if they were roller skates or like roller blades, you know, like were they, you know, were they four wheels or two wheels? What was interesting, the other thing that I like is the suitcase suits. Now, I've seen all kinds of suitcase suits. One is a very much a traditional suit. You pop it open, you see the gloves and the helmet, and he has to put it on. But the one in the second Iron Man film was actually based on a real comic issue, is where the suitcase itself turns into a suit, right? And so that's always been amusing to me. But of course, as technology evolves, we have nanoparticles, we have extremists, we have all different types of ways Tony has evolved his suits from, you know, the latest tech to cutting edge to bleeding edge armor. So I think it's just, you know, just having a small portion of some of that tech would have been really fun, to have.
Yeah, my husband was always talking about something called a Hulkbuster or a huge suit to fight the Hulk or something like that.
Absolutely. So Iron Man has quite a lot of different and unique suits. I actually did a small YouTube short about this. Iron Man is one of the most prolific costume changers in the Marvel Universe, alongside maybe Wasp and a couple of other Avengers. But he does have very specific armors for doing very specific things. And yes, one of them is the Hulkbuster suit, which is a massively oversized suit that he built just to be able to handle the Hulk. And we see it used in, I think, Age of Ultron. So that was a lot of fun. And it was a satellite that actually came down that he called Veronica. And it came down and put the Hulk into a holding cell for a couple of minutes, but also helped build up his suit. And funny thing about that, it's called Veronica because Bruce Banner's girlfriend is called Betty. So it's a bit of the Archie influence where he's got Betty, but Tony has Veronica. So that was a funny thing.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So our next question, are there any other lesser known Iron Man stories that you think deserve a wider audience? I've enjoyed exploring the other books after you talked about them.
Yeah, I wouldn't call these lesser knowns, but there are some runs that I really liked. So, like I said, Michelinie and Bob Layton's first run on Iron Man, number 116 to 157. So that's a pretty long run. This is in the late 80s. So at around 116, Michelinie takes over as the writer. Between 120 and 128, you have the Demon in the Bottle storyline. So within that run, you have an excellent storyline. Then just after that storyline is completed, we're introduced to Justin Hammer, who we met in Iron Man 2. We're introduced to Scott Lang, who would eventually become the new Ant-Man, and Bethany Cable. Another new character that plays a major role. Plus, there are some big armor and tech upgrades at that point. So the run from 116 to 157 is a very exciting Iron Man run. I would definitely recommend that.
How do the themes in Iron Man comics reflect real world issues?
That's a good one. So a lot of comics actually are able to reflect real world issues in their own creative ways, right? So I think when we're talking Iron Man, from its initial eras in the 60s, it's about, hey, you know, it's about technological advancement and who maybe has the biggest bomb and the best weaponry, right? And that's like, you know, echoes the Cold War. I think when we get into maybe the late 60s, we're talking about the Vietnam War, and of course Tony's original capture and release, where he eventually became Iron Man, that of course shifted as well. And it was during the Vietnam War that he was captured and escaped, right? And so there's all about that, about, hey, government overreach and fighting a war that nobody wants, that kind of thing. And I think post 9/11 we saw that the hyper advancement of tech and fears of runaway terrorism, I think, definitely reflect those stories, like I said, in the after 2001. So I think Iron Man does a pretty good job of reflecting real world issues. And yeah, I think a lot of comics do. But Iron Man is definitely up there with one of the more reflective of reflections, if I could say that.
All right, so we're starting to get to the end of our time here. So I'm going to just kind of ask you an overall question here that has been asked in a number of different ways. And it's basically this. What do you think the future holds for Iron Man in the Marvel Universe? What's our look ahead?
Well, just recently it's been revealed that Tony has decided to return to weapons manufacturing. So as you recall, he stopped doing that after his initial first kidnapping and the creation of the Iron Man suit. His company changed completely. But lately, he's actually turned back to weapons manufacturing, and it's shocking the world and comic fans alike. Who knows where we're going to go from here? As we know, Robert Downey Jr. is currently filming Avengers Doomsday with almost everybody else in the history of Marvel movies. Who knows what that will lead to? There has been Iron Man to Doctor Doom back and forth in the comics as precedent, so this might be something that we see in the future. But we'll wait and see. But I definitely would say keep your tabs, keep your tabs on Robert Downey Jr. and see what his next moves are, because I'm curious myself.
So this isn't a listener question; it's for me. But I'm just curious: how is your YouTube channel going?
The channel is going great. We are just getting our 8,000th subscription. Very, very shortly. We're up to 32. I think I'm working on the 33rd video, which is a, long form deep dive. But every day there's a short that comes out, and it has little bits of tidbits of information, funny stories, little bits of trivia, that kind of thing. Those seem to be well received. We're getting a lot of feedback from fans, comments, questions. The numbers keep growing, and it's been such a blast because I get to relive a lot of this stuff, and I get to learn and understand more and just dive into some of the weirder corners of the comic book universe.
Yeah, I know from what I've been watching, what you've been doing. The channel, by the way, is Read the Freaking Comics, and you look it up on YouTube. It's great. But there's some information out there that you just wouldn't even think of, that you get mm-hmm. into. But the interesting thing I found is there's been a couple of cases, and I'm no expert on comics, but I know some stuff, you look at it, well, it actually starts to make more sense if you know this other information. So it's interesting to see what is out there. Well, Michael, thank you so much for answering these today. And I'm sure we're going to get questions on the questions, and we're looking forward to whatever you bring us next.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. It's been such a blast.
That whole segment was your questions, and keep them coming in. Userfriendly.show is the place to go. Go to the website. There's a big blue button that says Ask Your Questions. You can use that to submit questions, comments, story ideas, anything you want to talk to us about. Please keep them coming in. We love to hear from you. And this is the way that we get our programming and the way that we get everything out to you. Until next week, this is User Friendly 2.0, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User Friendly 2.0, copyright 2013 to 2025 by User Friendly Media Group Incorporated. All rights reserved. Content is the opinion of the show's participants and not necessarily this station or platform. Requests for material use, interviews, CCPA, privacy notice for California residents, GDPR information for UK and EU residents, and any other feedback may be submitted at userfriendly.show. We welcome your input. Thank you for listening.